The town may be kind of small, but these folks have big smiles and big hearts. And they know what it is to have simple fun down our way, where old-fashioned singing and homey gatherings make living mighty pleasant.
My friend Curtis Stigers.
Curtis Stigers?
He's a jazz cat.
Did he have a brother? Like a blues guitarist from the early 90s, died of a heroin overdose?
This could have been him, but he's back alive. Tape's rolling.
Welcome to Abandoned Albums, the documentary podcast where we take a look at some albums that may have been forgotten about over time, and some albums you might not even know existed. I'm your host, Keith R. Higgins. And riding alongside me on his trusty steed is Rob Janicki. Hey, Rob.
Hey, Keith. How are you?
I've spent the past 48 hours immersed in black metal, Rob. Not the substance, the genre of music. I'm still trying to sort through that.
Stay tuned for terror.
On this episode of Abandoned Albums, we talk to writer, musician, and comedian Dave Hill. As a writer, Dave's had articles published for far too many magazines and websites to list here. His first book, Tasteful Nudes and Other Misguided Attempts at Personal Growth and Validation, was published in 2012, followed by Dave Hill Doesn't Live Here Anymore in 2016, and then Parking the Moose, One American's Epic Quest to Uncover His Incredible Canadian Roots, in 2019. As a musician, Dave was a member of the 1990s alternative band Sons of Elvis, which had a minor hit with a song called Formaldehyde. He also wrote and recorded the theme music for HBO's show Reverb, as well as Janine Garofalo's stand-up special, If You Will. Dave also wrote the theme song to Last Week Tonight with John Oliver and performs it with his band Valley Lodge. As a comedian, Dave's appeared in a bunch of television shows and web series and a bunch of stuff, much like his writing, too many things to list here. He was permanently banned from Twitter after he repeatedly responded to attacks from Trump supporters with jokes about having consensual sexual intercourse with their mothers and, in some cases, their fathers. He's also been named one of Variety Magazine's 10 Comedians to Watch. Oh yeah, he also does some podcasts and radio stuff, too. So as you can see, Dave Hill is a classic underachiever. But alas, it is none of those things that led Dave Hill to the inner sanctum of Thunderlove Studios. Dave is the brainchild and sole member of the heaviest black metal band of all time, Witchtaint.
You know what drives me crazy, Matthias Backwards?
What, Lance the King of Black Metal? And about 500 other things most people can't handle?
There are some people out there who don't even know the difference between black metal and death metal.
What? Black metal is the music of the gods, and death metal is pussy music for children who still live with their mothers.
Wait, I still live with my mother.
Oh, sorry.
As Lance from Gary, Indiana, the king of black metal, he began an email correspondence with a Norwegian black metal enthusiast who went by the name Satum. Satum also happened to be the owner of the Planet Satan Revolution record label, which had released music by the Norwegian black metal band Mysticum, and that would be the band that landed in Lance's crosshairs. By way of introduction, Rob and I will read one email exchange between Lance from Gary, Indiana, the king of black metal, and Satum, or Matthias Backwards. Dear Satum, okay, let me break it down for you. First of all, I don't think anyone who is truly into black metal would start an email by saying, "Hi, you're not working at a smoothie shop, buddy. You're representing black metal. Pull yourself together. I should know, I'm the king of black metal in my hometown of Gary, Indiana. You should hear my band, Witchtaint. We do mostly originals. I could send you our demo. Anyway, I guess I should check out the Mysticum you speak of, because the one I checked out wasn't extreme at all. It seemed like they were trying really hard to get on the radio, just like Euronymous did before he met his untimely death. I don't mean to badmouth a dead guy, don't get me wrong. I can't expect everyone to be a total badass all the time like me. I was just born this way, I guess. Born the king of black metal and a ton of other shit, too. Do you guys have stickers? You should put them up around town and maybe put something under the band's name that says, "Definitely not a bunch of pussies," so no one gets your Mysticum confused with the guys that I had the misfortune of hearing. Come to think of it, I'm going to kick my friend Todd's ass for turning me on to the wrong Mysticum.
Are you signing any new bands to your label? My band Witch Teen is so good, you guys will probably get rid of all the other bands on your label just so you can work full-time on a real extreme black metal band. Okay, let me know. I gotta go. My mom needs the computer. Blackest of the Black, Lance.
Satan's reply came the following day. I think you sound stupid, man. Hi instead of dear. What is the worst beginning an email with here? And are you still living with your ma? Ha! Get a life. You are not a king. Well, but if you want me to consider your band, you are welcome to send it to me. But if you are continuing being barefaced, you can fuck off. The ones who really are weak is the ones always have to tell everybody how cool they are, like you were doing. Think about that.
It's worth noting that English is not Satan's native language. You can read their complete exchange at theblackmetaldialogues.com. This led to some staged readings of the email exchange, and then some songs, and then ultimately to an album. The ear-shattering, soul-deadening, and side-splitting Sons of Midwestern Darkness. So without any further ado, here is our interview with Dave Hill.
In all seriousness, I was crying when I heard the name of the band.
Yeah, it's pretty, it's a good name, I have to say. I think it's the best band name of all time.
It certainly ranks up there for sure. Yeah. How did you come up with the name?
Before the emails that people know of, before that, there had been a couple years, maybe like 2002 or something. I had started it then where I was just randomly emailing black metal bands. And I just, made up Witch Taint, like just in the, I didn't even break a stride in my typing. I was just like, my band, Witch Taint. So it came to me just like it had been with me the whole time. So
it's almost like divine intervention from the Dark Lord himself. You know?
Yeah, it's not like I sat and thought about it. It just came, it was there.
Witch Taint has some serious legs.
Totally, yeah. It's been going, at least in my mind, since almost 20 years.
Jesus.
I'm kind of wanting it to go, you know, I feel like the taint has been tainted a little bit.
Really?
I kind of want to get back to the old school days where if you Googled Witch Taint, just the original black metal dialogues would come up.
This is dark metal, death metal, black metal, heavy metal. How many metals are there that we sort of differentiate between?
Oh, endless amounts of metal. I mean, in theory, you know, Witch Taint, the original idea was that it was black metal. The fictional Witch Taint that existed entirely in my mind was the most extreme black metal band of all time. And then, you know, the actual record that we made, which kind of came out of, you know, first we were doing stage readings of the emails. And then my buddy Phil and I started adding a few songs to that show. And we did that all, you know, we did it, started at St. Vitus in Brooklyn. We did South by Southwest was like our third show because I got asked to do stand up there. And I was like, oh, can I do this other thing one of the nights? And then it was a huge hit there. And then we did it in London. We did it in Oslo and like actual black metal fans came out, or bands, I should say, like Fenris from Dark Throne was in the front row, which was a huge honor. And then we did it at the Wacken Festival in Germany for 4 days, and like people were just like staring at us like, what the fuck is happening? But by then we had added, you know, like 3 or 4 songs, and they would go crazy when we played the songs. So finally we were just like, let's just be a real band. And Phil and I made this record, Sons of Midwestern Darkness.
Yeah.
It's just the whole concept is just so fucking brilliant.
You know, when I did those emails, I sent them to my friend John Kimbrough and my friend David Jaffrey, who the only two people on earth at the time, because, you know, now black metal, I feel like, is for years now has been like in the zeitgeist and people know about it, whether it's just in a funny way or whatever. But, you know, back in the early 2000s, that wasn't the case. And I didn't think it would be of interest to anybody but my two friends who were into black metal. And another friend, Jeff Watson, made the website, theblackmetaldialogues.com, where people can read these emails. Then that was on Gawker, which is not a very metal website.
No.
And it went crazy, like all over the world. And the people that got it understood that it was, you know, this guy, this comedian in New York. The people that were mad about it would, so I would get emails from people being like, oh, I love that, you know. And then the people that were mad about it invariably thought they were emailing a teenager in Indiana. I even got a message from the band Mysticum that I make fun of in the emails. They, when Witchstain had a MySpace page, which I think is no longer, they wrote and were like threatening Lance on that page, which I thought was like, that's genius. They seem to think this is a real kid.
Adds fuel to the fire.
And the thing is, like, I still have never heard Mysticum, the band that I make fun of throughout the thing. I've never listened to their music in my life. So they might be amazing for all I know.
There's no point listening now.
I know, I can't. It'll ruin everything.
The idea itself, like, yeah, like Keith said, I mean, you know this. It was really obviously funny, incredibly unique, but that genre of music, for whatever reason, is the perfect one. No, because you there is that line, like, you either get it or you don't. And the ones who don't get it, like, it could be real. In that genre, it could actually be real, which is why they don't get it.
You know, there's plenty of people in that genre who have, like, a sense of humor about it, but some people don't.
That's nice to hear.
Some do, some don't, you know.
All in good fun.
Sure.
Are you a metal fan?
Yeah, totally a huge fan. I mean, I'm a fan of all sorts of music, but I've always been a huge metal fan and fan of extreme metal and extreme anything, really. Whatever the thing is, it can be extreme toast, I'm in, you know. I like when people take stuff, something too seriously, which is what initially, you know, what I thought was so funny about black metal, you know, what a lot of people find funny about it. But I do like, yeah, all sorts of metal. There's a lot of metal I hate. I mean, I should say, I think with most genres, well, most anything, I hate most of it, which, so most metal I think sucks, but I think most of everything sucks. Even the things I love, including metal, I think most of it sucks, but there is enough awesome metal out there that I, you know, there's plenty of excellent metal for me to enjoy. But, you know, that's the same thing. Like comedy, I think most of it sucks, but there's enough of it that I love tons of it, you know?
I grew up starting pretty much with metal. I did what everybody else did around me, Black Sabbath, Iron Maiden, Judas Priest, all of that became like the music I started to love. And when black metal and death metal kind of really got big, I didn't get it. I didn't understand it because I was from this other old school metal. Did you have the same kind of thing? Like, was this real extreme metal something you just didn't get and easy to make fun of because it was nothing like Sabbath or Maiden or anything like that?
The music wasn't what I was making fun of, really, you know, or what I found to be funny. I thought what was funny to me is just like taking it so seriously, like that you're murdering people and burning churches. And John Aniello, like a very famous music producer, mixer dude, and friend of mine, he recommended Lords of Chaos to my friend John Kimbrough, and then John recommended it to me, and then I carried that book around with me because I thought it was so, the first 200 pages are like the funniest book I've ever read.
It's truly insane.
They talk about like Euronymous opens the record store, and at first they wanted people to carry torches around to look at the records, and then they realized that would be like impractical because they'd probably melt the records. But anyway, getting back to the music of it, I think with metal in general, you listen to one thing and, you know, because you can start at something like Maiden or, you know, Judas Priest or something like classic metal. And then there's sort of like, I remember the first time I heard Metallica, I was like, whoa, this is crazy. Now they're the biggest band in the world. But I think, you know, all metal is like that. You go from one thing to a new kind of ratchet up to me. Like, so to me, like a lot of death metal and black metal sounds really like for children to me now. Like, it's just bad. Like, I don't want to shit on, well, I'll just tell you, like, you know, some of the bands I just think sound like, that's cool if you're like 12 years old. You know, I don't like triggered drums. I think those, they sound lame. And like my friend Chris Reifert, who plays in Autopsy, one of the greatest death metal bands of all time, you know, like that's all him playing. There's no triggered drums. And I think that's one of the reasons they're so good is like it's raw. My friend Curtis Steigers, this is going to be just name dropping episode. I took him to see At the Gates, Amon Amarth and Arch Enemy. So I'm friends with one of the At the Gates guy, Jonas, guitar player. More name drop. I'm just going to drop names throughout to make myself seem cooler.
Have at it.
So At the Gates is great, but then not taking any away from Arch Enemy and Amon Amarth, but they have all these lame triggered drums and all that. So, but he, having never even heard this kind of music before, was like, this isn't heavy. This is just like, sounds like bees buzzing. Like it's not, there's no impact to this music. And I was like, that's actually nice to hear because I fully agree with it because these bands could be heavy, but they're not because it's too slick. They're great at what they do. Don't get me wrong. It's just like, kind of like, I guess, I don't know if you've ever had Metamucil. It's the fiber, you know, you.
Sure, sure.
Keeps you regular, but like I just take straight psyllium because that's like the raw straight husk. I don't need like sugar and orange flavoring added. Give me the raw real thing. That, so basically in my analogy, Autopsy is pure psyllium and Arch Enemy is Metamucil.
Ah,
there you go.
Way to bring it back.
You know, and with, I have absolute respect for Arch Enemy. It's just not extreme for me.
Is there a relationship to the depth of evil, to umlaut and whatever those little null set letters are called?
I mean, I'm a big fan of an umlaut, especially when it's added unnecessarily. But it's, you know, since Motley Crue did it, I don't think you can really argue that it's evil or extreme. It's cool. I'm glad they did it. And it worked out well for Motorhead as well. But
it sure did, yeah.
I would say whatever that's called, the little line through the O is more extreme, I think. You know, make all the T's be upside down crosses.
100%.
You know, the logo should look like a 15-year-old drew it. If you want to be good at music.
Why do they do that? Why do they want? Why do they? They don't want anyone to read their band name.
The unreadable logo. I don't know, like what the if I can continue name dropping my friend Paul Riedel, even though I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing his last name properly.
So you guys are close.
Where he's my best friend. But he is singer and guitar player for Blood Incantation, who arguably have the least readable logo in music. But you see it and you're like, oh yeah, Blood Incantation. But I think it's, I don't know what the reasoning is for an unreadable logo, but maybe it's to, if you know, you know, and if you don't know, you weren't meant to know.
Secret Society.
Blood Incantation is a real band?
Yeah, they're great. It's kind of like space, death metal, cosmic, with new age leanings.
I know all about you. Do you understand? You were afraid of the dark when you were a child. Not because of robbers or thieves or murderers. Children don't think of such things. You were afraid of the dark because of the boogeyman.
We have the king of rock, the king of pop, and Lance proclaims to be the king of black metal.
That's a bold statement.
Yeah, I mean, I just started, you know, in the original emails, I started calling myself Lance the king of black metal. And then sort of shortly after, I started doing stuff for the website Metal Injection. And in that, I was just called the king of metal so it could be more inclusive of all metals. I think with anything, you can just, if you say it enough times and with enough conviction, it becomes accepted as fact. I mean, we're learning this the hard way more and more every day. But yeah, I think if you just call yourself whatever, eventually people will be like, yeah, he's the king of black metal.
Let's make a note of that, Rob. We should be the kings of music podcasts.
You should. I mean, just do it. And then eventually people will be like, you're, you know, it's like one of my bands, Valley Lodge, is like a power pop band. We toured Japan. Ever since we did that, everyone was like, oh, they're massive in Japan, even though we never said that. And the tour was like playing like clubs, 200 people. But I think because people associate an American rock band like Cheap Trick live at Budokan, ever since then, if you read anything about me, they'd be like comedian rock star. And it started with touring Japan. People just started calling me a rock star. And I realized it was like, oh, it's just this thing that I didn't even say it. Someone else said it. And now everyone says it.
Speaking of big bands, I think I read that Phil Anselmo from Pantera is a fan of yours. And I wonder, when you started this, and did you ever think that, you know, people would really get it and latch onto it and want to follow what you're doing? Or was something like, you know, Pantera and others who were fans, that just a huge and complete surprise to you?
You mean with Witch Taint or just my past body of work in general?
Back to Witch Taint.
With Witch Taint, Phil Anselmo, not unlike Malcolm Gladwell, were kind of like early. I think Malcolm Gladwell's like ground floor Witch Taint fan from the original emails. And then Phil, he, I think, got into Witch Taint because my friends Chris Lee and Sean Isolt, who are some of my best friends, Sean was the bass player in White Zombie. So they were friends with Phil because they used to tour together. And they started sending him some of my like comedy stuff. And along with that, the Witch Taint emails. So he became, yeah, an early fan of Witch Taint. I don't know. I think, he's told me a couple songs that he likes of the actual band. So yeah, no, I'm always thrilled when anyone whose work I admire, likes anything that I do. I think, you know, obviously I'm cool, psyched if anyone likes anything I do, but when someone who's, you know, I'm a fan of their band or their comedy or whatever is like, likes what I do, I'm like, oh, I'm doing something right, you know?
That's always a good thing.
Yeah.
Is your focus on comedy or music now? Both is not an answer.
Both is not an answer? Oh, fuck. No. I mean, I'm just kind of fusing them together as much as I can, even though, you know, I make music that is not, you know, Witch Taint is really the only comedic music I've ever made, even though there's like jokes in, you know, Valley Lodge music and stuff, and, you know, Painted Doll, that my band with Chris Reifert, we have a sense of humor. But I didn't answer your question yet. I don't know. I think I can't say both. So say at the moment, I'm probably doing more comedic things, but I'm also making a new Valley Lodge record at the moment. So
awesome.
I am doing both, even though I'm not allowed to answer that. I would say I'm doing more. I perform live comedy way more than I do live music, but I incorporate the guitar and will rip some solos with other, you know, like I perform, I do comedy with music, you know, artists, musical artists. And then, so I'll do comedy and then come out and rip some solos with them or whatever, okay. You know.
All right.
I believe you did, at least as far as Witch Taint is concerned, your philosophy is the fewer time, or the, you know, fewer records you release, and playing live is probably not something you should do ever. Did you say that once? And that follows that trajectory.
Yeah, black metal is like notorious for inactivity. So the less you can do is the better. Yeah, exactly. So I don't perform with bands fully, like just a full music show, I think I've only done like one in the last 2.5 years, one like full music show. Everything else has been music, comedy with some music thrown in. But yeah, I think it's good to not, if you're black metal, it's good to not not record music or perform it that often.
So at this point, let's sum up a little bit what we know about, what we've learned about black metal.
Sure.
The letter O with the divide sign through it is important.
I don't know if it's important to black metal, but it's just Scandinavian typing.
So if Rob and I want to start a black metal band, we would want to refer to ourselves as the kings or queens of something. We would want to record a record, but not tour, and preferably die.
Always good.
So that's sort of, and we would need to be harder than anybody else.
Well, yeah, but, you know, then there's an argument that could be made, like sort of like new age black metal, where you could be softer than everyone else.
That can't be a thing.
Yes, it is. You could just make like a keyboard record and be like, yeah, this is black metal. And in doing that, you're arguably more extreme than really heavy music, because you've come out the other side. It's like going like so lowbrow that you end up being highbrow. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
You can do that with music too, where you go so soft that it becomes heavy again.
I think I remember back in the day when Green Day released the song Good Riddance, and it was like the first soft acoustic thing that people had heard from them. They were like, yeah, this is the most punk rock thing we can do right now. I don't know if they really meant that or not, but I think that's along the same lines of what you're saying. Just, you know.
Exactly. Yeah. Zig when everyone else is zagging.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And to that point, I think also I'm going to be honest here. When the band Ghost first came out, and I think metal is the only thing you can really do this with, I wasn't sure. And I'm still not sure what their deal is. Like when they first came out though, I was like, is this real? Are they a real band? Is this some sort of like, you know, comedic thing, you know, because of all the marketing and the way they looked, but they didn't sound anything like they looked. I didn't get it. But I'm wondering now if they were onto something.
I think so. I mean, obviously they have a sense of humor. When that first record came out, I heard the record before I knew what they looked like, and I was really into the music. I think that first record is great. I mean, I like a lot of their, it's not like I don't think I've heard their most recent record, but I usually like what they're doing. But I do think it's hilarious, like especially going to all Catholic schools for my, you know, growing up Catholic as can be, you go see them live and it's at least the, you know, cause I saw them, you know, on tour for the first record and the second record, maybe third one. But they're basically, especially the early songs, were just like taking Catholic prayers and just turning them upside down to make them satanic, which I think is one of the funniest things you could do.
I love that.
It's hilarious.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, so I thought I was, as a Catholic, not that I'm like practicing Catholic, but I don't think you can ever escape Catholicism. So I'm not, I never say like ex-Catholic.
Yeah.
Because it's scarred, you're scarred for life no matter what.
Kind of sticks with you, I think. It's,
yeah. It so I found as a Catholic, I found them especially entertaining because I'm all for, you know, satanic things like in the Christian notion of them, of like that there's the devil and all the upside down crosses and stuff, even though if you really, not to get overly analytical of Satanism, but you know, it really doesn't have that much to do with any of that, but that's all.
Okay.
I'm not a Satanist, I should stress, even though I think they're great.
Extremism on either end, whether it's Satan or God, not good.
No.
Except toast. Extreme toast would
extreme
be good.
Extreme toast is good. I will say, I'm not on Twitter anymore, but the Church of Satan Twitter account is maybe the best, the funniest Twitter account there is. They're very funny. And when I was on Twitter, I was like, hey, like, because they would respond to me sometimes. And I was like, hey, why don't you follow me? And they don't follow anyone. Duh, of course they don't.
That's great.
Oh, this is a grand trip. It's like shooting an arrow into a feather pillow. But this boy knows, zam, right through the skull. That's the spot, all right.
Why Lance? Why Gary, Indiana?
It was all just stuff that came out in the moment. Like, it was, didn't really think about it at all. Like, Gary, Indiana, I just thought of as like, it's where Michael Jackson was born. I think that's why it was in my head. And I just wanted like some, like the opposite of Norway, even though, you know, probably Gary wasn't the city to pick. I should have picked like Fort Wayne or something, South Bend. I have been to Indiana a bunch and I've been to Norway a bunch. And I can say that Indiana and Norway are quite different.
I was about to venture into the territory of asking whether or not Indiana is the Norway of the United States, and it would appear that it is not.
I guess it, in a way, no, it isn't. Where is the Norway of the United States?
For all the things Staten Island is not, it is a hotbed of Norwegian transplants.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and you can look it up. There's a huge Norwegian. One of my best friends is Norwegian. I went to college with a ton of people whose families were from there, from Norway. So Staten Island does have its, yeah, it's very strange. But
actual people from Norway living in Staten Island?
Yes. Yeah, 100%.
I'm not taking any shots at Staten Island.
No, you should.
But I can say with confidence, if I had a choice between living in Norway and Staten Island, there's no way I wouldn't live in Norway. Norway is an amazing country. God, what are you doing in Staten Island? No offense, Staten Island, lovely. Don't get me wrong. Great place to raise a family if many other places are not an option. Norway, I mean, it's just like, oh, the healthcare and just like basically everything they do is just like the quality of life you can have there is amazing. Yeah. It's insanely expensive, but the wages reflect that. So
I don't know where the fuck I saw it recently, but something about all these people listing all the things that had happened to them in foreign countries where they had national healthcare. Like somebody broke a leg, they went to the hospital, didn't get a bill on the way out.
It's insane. I mean, like, I not to get go down this whole wormhole, but like, yeah, like I've been all over the world, and I've not heard anyone in any country ever be like, oh, it sucks that I can get medical treatment and not get stuck with a bill. Like Canada, you got to wait in line for 6 weeks to get a broken leg fixed. It's like, no, you don't. I've been to Canada 7 bazillion times. I have friends there. I've talked with a million people. Everyone's like, oh my God, it's the best. In Norway, I went to this bar called Kniven. The story is that the guy who opened the place was coming home one night, and he saw these guys like doing graffiti, and he told them to stop, and they stabbed him. And so the government was like, oh my gosh, that's so bad. Here's like $20,000 because that negative thing happened to you. After they, you know, treated the stab, you know, took care of the medical aspect of it, they gave him like, oh my gosh, that shouldn't happen here. So they just gave him this money and he opened a bar and called it The Knife.
Perfect. Conversely, what would happen here in the States is somebody gets stabbed, they would get charged $200,000 and nobody would be prosecuted. Nothing would happen.
Yeah, exactly. It's crazy.
Hello, Lance. Do you ever get tired of, you know, worshiping Satan and stuff?
No. Why? Do you?
No. That is why I asked. I never get tired of worshiping Satan.
Totally. Satan's the best.
Totally. He's like the best guy.
Yeah, Satan rules. Everyone knows that.
Right. Well, anyway, I'm glad we had this talk.
Yeah, it was nice. Hail Satan.
Yes, hail Satan. Be seeing you.
What is Witch Taint up to now? Well, that's one question. And then a sub question. Can we ever expect a Witch Taint movie, documentary, mockumentary? Because that would be fantastic.
I think so. I mean, without revealing too much, I think that is the greatest likelihood, greater than the likelihood of us ever recording music or playing a show again. The band, I think, is done, at least in that iteration that made that record. You know, maybe arguably Lance, the King of Black Metal, if you look at the history of Witch Taint, is the sole.
Oh, yeah.
Began as the sole member and is once again the sole member.
Yeah.
So maybe there'll be more Witch Taint music and some, but I think a movie is would be way more likely.
Now, would it be a fictional movie or a documentary? Because if you're taking requests, I'd love a documentary.
Well, you may be disappointed.
Ah.
If nothing else, the legend will live on.
Oh, of course.
And t-shirts. I'll always be selling, even though I don't think I'm selling shirts at the moment. Because I need to find a new silk screener, but you know,
I got a guy in Rhode Island.
Who doesn't have a guy in Rhode Island, Keith?
Right, and who doesn't have a silk screen guy in this day and age?
We got to. Well, I had a good guy, and then his business went tits up.
You know, that's a phrase that doesn't get used enough.
Tits up.
Tits up.
I'm really surprised it came out of me. I don't know why I said it. I mean, it's not like I walk around saying tits up often, but clearly, maybe I do because I've said it twice now.
Dave, there's an example of how Witch Taint and Lance even happened, right? Because you said it was in the email, it came out, you don't know why, so tits up is now the next thing.
Yeah, it just flows from me. Tits up.
Have you thought about putting all the emails in a book?
I have thought about that. That could maybe happen at some point, but I think I've brought it up with my agent a few times, and he's like, you can't, you got to do this other one. Like, I'm writing my fourth book right now. And I know if I called my agent and was like, can we do the Witch Taint book? He'd be like, no. Idiot.
What book are you writing now?
My new book is about hockey loosely. That's all I can say.
It's so weird you said that. I was just going to ask you a hockey question because hockey and metal are, it's kind of a thing. So many Scandinavian players, so many people from Eastern Europe, and they come out to metal. A lot of them do. So I don't know if I have a question about that. I just wanted to bring it up, and maybe there's some sort of, you know, hockey connection as well, because it is that their chosen style of music. Maybe not death metal, but certainly metal.
You know, you go to any hockey game, you probably hear like Pantera and like a lot of classic metal and stuff. And I think it just goes well, like the intensity of the game and the intensity of the music. I mean, you're not going to put on like third period of game 7 of the Stanley Cup conference finals. You're not going to be like, let's put on
Harry Styles
to really push.
You can't come out. Yeah.
I just went to see some pro hockey games in Poland, and they would play metal, but then they would play like Polish techno and stuff like that didn't seem like really right to me, but I loved it because I was in Poland. I was like, let's go, you know.
Do you guys remember the Rob Lowe hockey movie?
Yes, I believe you're talking about Youngbloods.
You are correct, sir. Yes.
Yeah,
that's an underrated Rob Lowe movie.
That's redundant, I believe.
Aren't they all?
All of these movies are underrated.
Did you play hockey growing up?
Yeah, I played until my sophomore year in college.
Wow.
And then like a couple games into sophomore year season in college, I was just like, all my friends are at a Faith No More concert. Why am I in an ice rink in New Jersey right now? And I quit. I just lost the fire. Sometimes I'll get out there and play, you know, but I don't play regularly. Just I would, but I'm too busy and like I can't go breaking my leg.
No. Certainly not in America.
Not in America. No, not if you want treatment.
Right.
This is good stuff, Dave. You must be very pleased.
Anything that happens with Witch Taint is amazing to me because it truly started as me sitting on the couch in my underwear, not thinking anyone besides whoever I was emailing in Norway about it would ever hear of Witch Taint. So the fact that people now know Witch Taint all over the world is mind-blowing to me.
This was good fun. Thank you.
Thank you.
I think Witch Taint should do a movie, whether it's documentary or fiction. I don't really give a fuck.
I hope so. I think it would be fun, you know.
All right, Dave. Listen, thank you. Are you on tour right now?
I'll be on tour this summer in July in the Pacific Northwest.
Okay.
And then I'll go to some other random places in America. And then hopefully hit up some other countries after that.
We wish you well in your sojourn and your travels.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. Yeah.
Thank you.
And more Witch Taint, please.
There will be in some form.
Thanks, Dave.
Thank you very much.
Thanks. Have a good day.
Appreciate it, man.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Many thanks to the multi-hyphenate Dave Hill. Beginning in July, you can catch Dave on tour in the Pacific Northwest.
And then I'll go to some other random places in America. And then hopefully hit up some other countries after that.
To get the full origin story of Witch Taint, be sure to go to theblackmetaldialogues.com. The songs you heard during this podcast were all taken from the Witch Taint album Sons of Midwestern Darkness. And they were Death to Death Metal, Are You Ready to Black Metal, and Viking Heaven. You also heard the spoken word selections, Interlude, Black Metal versus Death Metal, and The Conclusion. Sons of Midwestern Darkness is available to stream wherever you stream your favorite music. Abandoned Albums was recorded at Thunder Love Studios.
Produced and written by Keith R. Higgins and Rob Janicki.
Engineered and mixed by Steve Beasley. Edited by A.J. Royce.
Original music by Mike Pellegrino. If you like what you've heard, be sure to subscribe and follow us on social media. At Twitter, we are at Abandoned Albums, and on Instagram, we are at Abandoned_Albums.
As always, thanks to Rob Janicki, S.W. Loudon, Nathan Sage, Steve Beasley, Mike Pellegrino, Therina Bella, and of course, our executive producer, Rufus Thunderlove.
And now, until we meet again next time, I remain as always obediently yours.
Abandoned Albums is a production of Paw Print Media.